The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
So, Justin, you think that later on we're going to want to dye our hair?
I think there's a moment where you probably, like, you look at that like, I want more youth, you know, like maybe there's that sort of crossing where
it's when,
like,
you get a motorcycle and you date a younger girl.
Yeah. Some people go that route. Yeah.
No, it's like the mustache phase that you go through.
You start using, like, I might actually start using lotion, you know, stuff like that. Like, I might actually consider it.
Dude, I'm telling you, I dyed my hair.
You're maybe, just shed right now like a snake right now.
I'm just one big ashy mess.
I'm just shedding, bro. Yeah. Leave me alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let me rot in the desert. Yeah,
our luck, though, it's probably healthier that he does that. We're rubbing all these chemicals all over us to stay moist.
See, you know what? I'm a lot like you, Adam, in your training methods. Like, I wait till that last minute to then ramp it up. You know what I mean? I'm waiting to reveal my sexiness to the world.
You don't
world.
Have to moisturize everything. I just moisturize arms and the knees down.
Oh, gotcha.
So I don't moisturize like my thighs.
Knees. Look at this.
My chest, my legs
are out of control.
Yeah, what is that? It looks like you ran across.
Winter is coming.
It looks like you've been walking on the carpet on your knees for like the past couple hours. That's what it looks like.
Well, I do have another job, so I gotta pay the bills.
My bub's not doing good enough yet, huh?
Yeah, still on my knees.
Delicious.
I worked for Shreds.
How was that keto friendly ice cream, Adam?
You like that?
Yeah.
Pistachio and walnut.
Yeah.
Super keto friendly.
You got the fats in there.
This guy, does it just like come on all of a sudden? You're like, no, I need some.
Bro, I swear to God, Adam's like, there's certain things about him that's like a kid. Like, he'll come in, but he doesn't just get ice cream.
Right.
He has ice cream and he's got the, like, what is that thing that was sticking out of
it? Well, they give
like
you
the cookie sticking out of it.
They give that to you.
And he's got like three flavors.
I can't hang out with him very long because, like when we go on our retreats.
Oh, you two
stuff,
always get fat.
I don't know what it is, but like, he just knows. He's like, hey, come on, dude. And he just like gives me a look.
He picks on you though. He doesn't ask me shit.
I'm like, yes. Justin's like, do this.
Pick on the weak one.
He goes after the wounded wildebeest.
Totally.
I know I can convince Justin to get some shit food with me.
Like, oh yeah, that looks good.
I call it having balance. That's what I call it. Call it having balance. I don't want to be too neurotic.
Right.
You know,
one of these days I'll eat ice cream and then you guys are going to hang around for the following couple hours just so you can see what happens.
Oh, I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that. That gelato was phenomenal, though.
It's not gelato, for fuck's sake. It's ice cream.
I'm going to punch
really
you in the
stomach. About
you
this.
You are
topic.
Really passionate. Dude, stop being a vagina head.
Listen, right now,
yeah.
If I made shoes and I copied the shit out of Nikes and I put a swoosh on them and I'm like, here's some Nikes, would you say they're Nikes or would you say, no, they're just some fucking shoes you copied to make them look like Nikes?
That doesn't work with
he's
food.
Hitting you in
it
your
does.
No, it doesn't
grounds.
Work with food.
Gelato is made in Italy.
You put an Italian
I almost was about
thing
to,
in there.
I was going to do that, but I would come
gelato.
Across.
Gelato. Hey.
My cousin, what'd you say?
I said, hey, my grandmama made me gelato.
Yeah. No, there's a particular way that gelato is made that is different than American ice cream. I'm not saying it's better or worse. Some people like
is
one or the other.
Is this another one of those scenarios where you're just saying that, but you have no proof to back it up? Because
it's 100% true. Oh. If you go to Italy and you have gelato there, it is different. Americans make ice cream. It's
well, what
different.
The fuck does that mean? That means nothing to me that you say that. Of All course right.
well,
it's
you
different.
You know what sucks is that All Irish people fuck. Make horrible food, so I got nothing.
Gelato has less fat than ice cream. While ice cream is normally heavy on the cream and has a fat content of at least 10%, gelato uses more milk than cream and also uses less egg yolks. Ice creams are churned faster and harder than gelato. Gelato is churned a little slower. And when you go to Italy, you see the way they present the ice cream.
Whoa, whoa, stop. See, this, I'm not allowing you to do this. I'm not allowing you to Google something and compare gelato to ice cream and then all of a sudden just assume what I just had was ice cream. That was fucking gelato.
Listen.
Because it was in Italy does not make it not gelato.
I'm down for a trip
and
to
just
go verify
just because you pulled
claims.
Up some Google bullshit to compare gelato to ice cream does not mean what I just had wasn't gelato. That was gelato, bro.
No.
I am very familiar with the difference between ice cream and gelato. I didn't need you to Google that and tell me and tell me that. Then you still followed up the statement with it's different again,
bro,
with no proof.
You're making me, you know, you're like that guy that's like, oh, I went to Olive Garden. I had a bologna rigatoni salad or some shit. It's a time. It's like, no, bologna rigatoni.
No, I'm not. I told you before that it's, I'm not comparing it. Okay, if you went and had some homemade pasta that's made in Italy from some old lady that's in your family and shit, then that's completely different than me going down to Olive Garden and having pasta. That's totally different. You're talking about something that's being processed that's probably made in a fucking box versus some old lady with a secret recipe that's been in the family for 100 years to make that. And I'm sure there's somebody who makes gelato unique and adds something special to it. But until you can prove to me what the fuck that is in that recipe, then it is no different. And I have had gelato all over the world, and it tastes the same everywhere.
You didn't go to Italy.
I haven't been in Italy.
Oh, okay.
I've been to France,
though.
Yeah,
that's so. All. That's,
oh, yeah.
That's
oh, the French, they make...
yeah, they're French fries.
They make crepes.
French fries in France taste the same as French fries in America, too.
You do realize that French fries, that I don't think they were invented
those
in
are
France.
Freedom fries!
Yeah.
Hey!
No, listen, this is... There's a lot of stuff that was copied from the Italians that they make it sound like it's sound. I'm going to tell you something.
Dude, you know what? Put a Greek and Italian
all
in a room.
I know
fucking
is a
this all over here all day long. Put
no,
a
like,
Greek and an Italian. They
like,
can talk about how everything was started from them.
Like pepperoni. You know pepperoni on pizza? Do you know what pepperoni means
my
in Italian?
Favorite.
What?
Means peppers. An American invented that type of salami, and they're like, what are we going to call it? Oh, I don't know. Let's call it pepperoni because it sounds Italian. It's not fucking Italian. Pepperoni's American.
Wow.
That's just one example.
You just ruined my
still
pizza.
Has nothing to do with gelato.
So, that's just an example.
So can I put this to rest?
Oh, please.
Oh, here we go.
Okay, here we go. Gelato, to make it, there's a ingredients and a process.
Right.
And you can take the ingredients and the process from Italy, and you can take it to America, and you can make it in America. I've had gelato in Italy. I've had it in America. I've had it in Japan. I've had it in other countries.
No.
And it tastes the same.
Dad
it's a process.
No, I just came in with the right hook.
That's it.
Daddy just put it down on you, son.
Sorry, Sal.
Oh. Hey, you know what? It only took a little over a year, but I'm slowly winning Doug over.
Listen,
I see it happening.
I am slowly winning Doug over.
Let me explain something to you.
Mm.
Gelato is not just the process of making the ice cream. There's an experience.
Hey, Dad.
It's where you're sitting.
Sal,
it's who you're with.
I'm telling you.
It's the country you're in.
We're trying to justify a trip to Italy, bro.
Yeah,
I'm making that case for you.
Okay, I will say that there's one ingredient you cannot add. It's the air from Italy, and we know that's special.
Here, I'll give you some Italian air. Come sit next to me, Doug, you fuck.
Hey, hey, God has spoken. We move forward now. Hey, moving on now.
God.
Really? It's got my arm! We have summoned...
The motherfucking Quah.
The Eagle of Quah.
No queeness in there.
All right. Time to fight. Lime has asked, how do you figure out macros and calories for someone just starting out?
Oh, we'll start with Adam.
You guys gave me one macro question.
His favorite topic.
The most accurate way to do this is actually to track what you're currently doing right now. So I think the mistake that the average person makes is they Google and look up a generic calculator that says put your weight in, put your age in, put your activity in, and then it kicks off. Now, those aren't a bad idea to give somebody a kind of a generic idea of where they should be around.
Baseline.
Yeah, baseline. But if you want to be really accurate about it and take into consideration that we all have different metabolisms and you may have fucked that up or you may have a better one than you think. The best way to find that out is to track what you're doing. So what I do with a client when I first start off with them is I tell them to eat how you always eat. I don't want you to change anything. I don't want you to try and impress your trainer, but I want you to track and log everything. So we're going to log everything, whether you use Fat Secret or MyFitnessPal, a tool for tracking and logging. So we log all your foods. And then after a week or two, I'm going to assess it. Now, I'm also going to assess if we've maintained your weight, if it went up or down. So obviously, if you continue eating in a certain pattern, I see you going up, you're eating in a surplus. But if, like most people, they're stuck at a weight. Most people that hire a trainer or are looking to lose weight, they've been kind of hovering and stuck around that weight. So they're probably eating around their maintenance already, which is what I want to see. and I have them track. And then from there, if your goal is to lose weight, then I want to put you in just a slight deficit. You know, I'm not trying to put you in a major deficit, somewhere between 250 to 500 calories a day from that if your goal is to lose weight. I want to do most of my work in teaching you balance of nutrients and food, like in the nutrition guide. That's what that's all about that we provide. And then on top of that is incorporating a good training program.
Yeah, I would say that the best way to know is, like you said, to track, because people, it's tough to, the best estimates can be off by hundreds of calories.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you got to write down what you've been eating and don't change it for at least a few weeks just to see if you're maintaining gaining or losing, and take it from there. But the nutrition survival guide that we offer can help tremendously in terms of figuring out macros and calories for you. As far as macros are concerned, I like to base that off of how I feel, and that's how I talk with my clients. Some people do feel better with a diet that has a higher carbohydrate ratio, and others feel better with a higher fat ratio. And it's not just about fat loss. It's about energy level, sleep, how your skin feels. Digestion is a big one.
You know, maintaining consistency too. You know?
Right.
It's got to be sustainable. It's a lifestyle change. The idea is not to be put someone on a diet just so they can lose weight and then go right back to what they were doing before,
right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. So I definitely think that, you know, this actually reminds me of something that I'm going through right now. I talked to you guys recently about Eric, who is a client of mine right now, who is the first Mind Pump listener that I took on for coaching, and real smart kid. So of course, like I told you before, like he likes to assess and analyze everything.
So you have him like weighing and measuring food and like getting to that meticulous of a detail with it.
Yeah, we're very detailed, and he wants to know, you know, and he's tracking with his Fitbit, he's tracking his steps, he's tracking his water intake, he's tracking his weight. So he's tracking everything, and then together, I mean, you know, we're going through changes in his eating and in his workout routine, and then we're assessing it. And we're talking about it. So one of the most recent things that we were assessing together was, he was like, man, Adam, I feel like I'm in this huge deficit, but I'm not losing a lot of weight. And I said, well, this is a perfect example of how these tools that even I highly recommend to people can be extremely off. Like Sal was saying, when you take into consideration that even the best tools out there, like your Fitbits, are still only about 92 to 94% accurate to your metabolism. So if you take that into consideration right out the gate, so there's already room for error there. You take into consideration that nutrition labels are allowed to be up to 20 to 30% off. So there's another huge discrepancy right there. And then any sort of user error where you forget to put your tool on, or you accidentally overestimate or underestimate something. So there's lots of room for error. But the key is that we have a baseline and we have an idea of your habits and your routine. So, you know, he was at like 1,000 based off his Fitbit, you know, and what we are consuming and what he's tracking, he was like at 1,000 calorie deficit, but we weren't really moving much. But I had told him, I said, that's not to worry. I already know, because we tracked your food for a week. I saw where you're at. And this is the amount of reduction that I have you at is actually where I want you, because I don't want to see this huge drop in your weight. I actually would like to see your weight stay about the same. And I know that I've definitely put you in somewhat of a deficit, and I know that we've changed up your routine. So change is happening. I know your body is having to have to adapt.
Well, I would think too that with food, that would be a little bit more accurate of a thing to lean on, as opposed to like calories burned and like, you know, activity levels. Because that being said, having technology and all these incorporations with that, it's just not there yet, man. Like you can associate that with step count, and maybe, you know, they have some altimeters in there where they actually, like, you know, test for incline, and then there's ways you can check with like heart rate and how hard you're working by beats per minute. But even then, like, unless you're wearing that every single moment, like all day long, you know, when you sleep, all this kinds of stuff, like the technology isn't there yet. So I wouldn't lean too heavy on that is what I'm suggesting.
Not at all.
Yeah.
The science doesn't even exist to be able to get accurate.
Right.
You know, you'll know where you're at. You'll know that you average 7,000 steps a day, and that if all of a sudden your you know, measuring device says 20,000, you know that you've increased your activity on that metric.
That's
but that's
point.
About it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there's even science now. They're taking animals. Check this out. They're taking mice, and they're taking mice, and they'll feed them the same food, and one mouse will be fatter than the other mouse. And then they're doing fecal transplants, where they're taking the gut flora from the fat mouse
this
and
is
putting
the exciting stuff.
And putting it to the skinny mouse. And guess what happens to the skinny mouse? Food intake doesn't change, activity level doesn't change. The skinny mouse all of a sudden gets fat.
Right.
And they'll do the switch. They'll do the same thing to the fat mouse. Well, they'll take the gut flora from the skinny mouse and put it in the fat mouse, and lo and behold, it gets lean. No change in food intake, no change in activity level.
Crazy.
This is fucking mind blowing. Yeah. Yeah. So
bacteria, huge influence.
Huge apparently. Influence. So So measuring your metabolism. Mm-hmm. Good luck. You gotta be objective and observe how your body responds and reacts and measure. You know, how active you are now versus how active you are tomorrow, and how you've been eating versus how you are eating now. That's about it. Other than that, you're shooting in the dark if you try and go.
Well, and I don't want you to, because you sound like you come back and we're poo-pooing those tools. I make every client.
No, they're effective.
Yeah,
so
it depends on what level you're in.
Yeah,
I think. Like,
It has taken my coaching, my training to a whole nother level of being able to help people, because it allows me as a trainer, and I don't know if this is somebody who has a trainer or not, but it allows me as a trainer to assess it. As a person, an average person who doesn't know a lot, it could be confusing, it could be daunting, it could be a bit challenging to try and figure all these numbers out and assess it. So I can see where a client or an average person who doesn't have a professional who's assessing it with them could get frustrated. But I think it is an extremely beneficial tool, because one of the things that you'll realize is, you know, we have a lot of patterns. So, you know, Sal brings up and Justin brings up the bacteria and stuff, but more than likely your microbiome is the same right now, because you're eating the same type of foods and your patterns, as long as you're kind of keeping the way you eat and consume, that's staying pretty consistent, whether it's good or bad. That's hard to argue or debate right now, but it's probably similar, because you eat the similar type of foods, you move about the same, you have the same job every day, you work out the same amount of times per week. So it gives me a really good gauge of your habits and what's going on. And then I know where I want to increase or decrease, whether it be I want to decrease a certain macronutrient or food that you're intaking, because we're tracking and I can see that. That's one way. Or two, do I want to increase your movement, because I notice you have patterns on certain days that you're not moving very much. Now, do I get really hung up on it says, you know, exactly, you know, 2,540 calories it said you burned today, and technically off of our food tracking, it says that you ate 1,745. Like, that doesn't matter to me. I'm not so caught up in the discrepancy of the food versus what the tool is saying, because that's too difficult. I'm just assessing what your normal patterns are, and then from there, how I manipulate and change. And then I'm turning around and I'm assessing, okay, we just increased activity. You went from averaging 8,000 steps a day, now we're averaging 12,000 steps a day. That's the only thing we're changing. We're eating exactly the same. Let's see how your body responds.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then
that's perfect, because that's what I mean. Like, they're great to track, you know, from where you are now to how much more active you are tomorrow. Yeah. That's when this is the same thing as like body fat testing. When I use when I use calipers to test someone's body fat percentage, first of all, my calipers, if that person were to die and we were to strip their fat off and measure it on a scale to see exactly what the body fat percentage was, I guarantee you my measurement's going to be off. It could be off by as much as 5%.
That's such a great point.
But if I test that person the same way, you know, the same method, the same way,
right,
consistently, we can see trends. We can track you're going up or you're going down. Whether or not my test says you're 7% and you really are exactly 7% is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. What's relevant is I can see you went down or you went up 3%. You see what I'm saying? And it's the same thing with the trackers.
Do you know this? You know, none of us competitors, nobody does body fat testing. It doesn't even matter to us.
Why would it? It matters how you look.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's you know, the people that are getting on stage and presenting
that's a great point to make for the listener, because I guarantee they think that, like, you know, that's a huge factor in, like, well, I'm at, like, you know, 10%. I need to get down to this 5% range. And like, it really just boils down to, like, what do I look like today?
Not one professional competitor out of my peers do I know actually use. Now, I've done it like for shits and giggles just to see, oh, well, wow, I'm down to 2% according to this machine or whatever.
Yeah.
But none of us use that as a indicator on, am I going the right direction? Even with Sal, what he's saying, if consistently, it is so, there's so much room for an error that when I have done that in the past where I'm using the body fat testing, it's like, man, if Sal measures me one day and then he's not around or available the next day, so the next time I get measured by Justin, there's huge and
big
both,
difference.
Both guys are professionals. Both guys know what they're doing.
We're going to approach it completely different. And that's just because of our own little like nuanced ways of doing things. And that's the problem I have a lot with metrics in general. There's just like, there's so many little like variables that are going to get in the way. So there's like this variance of, like a 5% range that's going to be off. You almost have to account for that going into it, like from the beginning. So.
Right. And with body fat percentage testing, just to be clear, I mean, if you're the average person and you get tested by the same person, it'll be pretty consistent in terms of telling you if you're going up or down. When you start to get into the single digit body fat ranges, the smallest change in how I test you, your number could go up a millimeter, which if you're 16%, I could go up 10 millimeters and your body fat percentage won't change much on the chart. If you're 3% body fat and it goes up a millimeter, now you're 5% body fat.
Yeah.
So that's...
You almost double, you're doubling your body fat.
Yeah, so that's what Adam's talking about, in that regard. But, I mean, you want to see where the trends are. You want to see if you're going up or you're going down, and that's what these tools are super effective for. But other than that, you put on this watch and you walk around and all of a sudden you're like, oh, it says I burned 3,400 calories. Yeah. That number is a really, really super rough estimate. Well, the technology doesn't exist.
It's like the new treadmill. You know, we always used to like put our hands on there and let it, you know, read my heart rate and give me feedback. And it like that was like dinosaur information now.
Yeah.
And now we have it on our wrist and we think that we're so cool. But it's the same fucking technology. It hasn't gotten any better. You know, like, oh, I burned 2,000 calories. No, you didn't. You did not.
It's slightly better. It is. Yeah,
because
you enter in your age and your weight and stuff like that, and it does take
anything. I'm going to talk trash and motivate them to get better. Okay.
Our next question is from Connor Sanderson from the forum. Does your ethnicity, genetics, or heritage play a role in how you respond to food?
Oh.
This is an excellent, excellent question. Connor, by the way, he runs the page Modern Day Dads on Instagram. We love it. It's one of our favorite pages. Great guy. So this is an excellent question. And I brought up a chart because I knew this was true, but I wanted to see what the chart said so I could be accurate with it. So I'm going to use a simple example. We'll use lactose intolerance as an example. So some people are lactose intolerant and some people are not. Now, we know for a fact that different regions of the world, or you have different ethnicities, you will be far more likely to be lactose intolerant than if you're from other parts.
The percentage in African Americans is extremely high, right?
The highest is East Asian.
Oh, wow, really?
East Asian lactose intolerance is 90 to 100%.
90 to 100?
Right, and then it goes down. African Americans from the north of Africa, 75%.
Okay,
from other parts of Africa, as high as 90%. And it goes all the way down. Here's a cool one. Italians, between 20 to 70%.
Oh, so, is it cool just because it's Italians?
Well, no, I'll tell you why this is cool. Because it was a huge range. So 20 to 70% is a huge range. Now, I'm from the south. My family's from the south of Italy. We're Mediterranean. Mediterranean's far higher in lactose intolerance than northern Italians, who are closer to northern Europeans. Northern Europeans have the best, are typically the nationalities or the races that have the least amount of lactose intolerance. So that's just a simple example. That has to extend to other types of nutrition. Now,
yeah, we drink straight from the udder.
Yeah, and that's the truth too.
Fine.
Like you look at like super white people, they tend to be able to have milk no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, it's true.
And there is one region of Africa, one tribe in particular, the Maasai, who can have dairy, and they actually survive on lots of dairy. And they're absolutely okay, and they've evolved to be able to consume lots of dairy. They're cattle herders. That's just one example, but you've got to consider that other things play a role. Like if your ethnicity brings you from a part of the world that you know is in, let's say, the middle latitudes where there's lots of abundance of fish and natural oils like olives and vegetables, and you're probably going to do better that way. And if you're Northern European, mm-hmm. Full fat dairy. It's probably going to be very healthy for you.
Well, you're going to pass on these adaptations through genetics and everything down the line, right?
Like, you can, and that's a really rough, generic way of putting it.
Yeah.
Number one, most people are not one, nationality anymore. People are mixed. Number two, they're now finding that the food that the mother eats influences that as well. her gut flora, it becomes part of your gut flora as you're, you know, when you're born, mm-hmm. and that could influence it. And even her state of mind, they're finding now that the stress levels of the mother and her experiences change the way your DNA is expressed. So this is way more complicated than, you know, than any answer I could possibly give. But does your ethnicity play a role? Absolutely. It has to. I mean, at one point, you know, you go back, you evolved in one part of the world, and, you know, maybe your spouse evolved in another part of the world, and there was different food available at that point. You know, we were not, you know, shipping food across the world like we are now. Yeah.
Really, in a sense, it's more like environmental. So, like, based off of what's available readily in your particular region, your environment.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. That's what we're talking about.
But it definitely has to be. I believe it's something that has been, it can be passed down from generation to generation. Cause I mean, I have, and this is anecdotal, but I know for sure you guys have had this same scenario where we've got a buddy or somebody that we know who is just built aesthetically, looks great. Guy eats fucking Taco Bell and gummy bears. You know what I'm saying? Like,
oh yeah, there's that role too, of course.
You know, so there's definitely, I mean, and that obviously, if you look a certain way like that and you can build muscle and that's the type of nutrients that you're feeding, where I know if I eat like that, like my body says, fuck you. It's not responding the way I want it to respond. So, you know, whether that's something that's genetic or what, but, and this is somebody I'm talking about that they were born and raised here. So they're born and raised in the same area, but it's been passed down from probably generations.
Well, I'll give you another example. Europeans have had agriculture for a long time, where they, you know, they've grown wheat, they've grown certain crops, and they've, you know, Europe was a very crowded place, you know, long time ago. Native Americans were hunter-gatherers until, you know, the Europeans came over and started colonizing, you know, the Americas. Native Americans have a much higher instance of diabetes from consuming a diet that's high in grains than European might. So when the Native Americans started adopting this Western diet of, you know, wheat and bread and, you know, these types of grains that were really not available, or they didn't really consume for the most part because they were, you know, hunter-gatherers, they just respond much, much worse than people who've maybe had that food for, you know, thousands of years or hundreds of years or whatever. And the same is true with, you know, lots of other foods. So it definitely plays a huge role. We're not at the point where we could test you. You know, we could do DNA testing. And it's interesting. Someone brought this up on the forum. By the way, some of the people on the forum I learn from on a daily basis. I don't remember the gentleman's name, but he's a DNA analyst. And somebody had asked the question about whether or not DNA testing was an effective way to know what kind of diet you should have. And he came on, and this is what he does for a living, and he says, no. He says, the science is way too early. It's just not there. So many factors that come into play that can deter that, where we can read your DNA and say, eat this way, eat that way, work out this way, work out that way. We're just not there yet. But we probably will be at one point. I think maybe 20, 30 years from now, maybe even sooner, you'll be able to get a DNA test, and it'll say, here's the perfect macro breakdown for you. Here's the foods you probably shouldn't eat. Here's the foods you should eat.
I agree.
And this will give you best health. And that will
be a lot more predictive measures that they can put in place that'll, you know, test long-term health and some predispositions as far as, like, you know, what you're going to be exposed to, you know, through your genetics. So,
well, this was the basis behind the whole, a few people have asked us questions about blood type diet.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that was the theory behind the blood type diet. Unfortunately, science has yet to, you know, confirm that that's an effective way of eating. But that was the theory behind it, right?
Oh, was that what thread this was on? Is that what it came? Because I remember when that thread started.
No,
on
that
forum.
Was on a different one on the forum.
The DNA one.
Yeah. The blood type diet thing is like, okay, type O blood type. That's the original blood type. It's the oldest one. Therefore, they need to eat like hunter gatherers. You know, type A, B. That's right. The newer one. They probably can have dairy and, you know, all the foods that we started having later on. And that's the theory behind it, but there's so much more that
there's
goes into it.
There's a lot more variables, I would imagine.
And let's also look, you could also have certain DNA, and it can be expressed based on your lifestyle. So your DNA may put you at certain, you know, predispositions, but the way you live changes the way those DNA is expressed, and then, boom, your risk is now gone.
Yeah.
So we just don't know how to measure all this stuff yet effectively. So
next up is from Move and Educate. It's asking about books that have changed your life, coaches that you follow, and some of these big name coaches out there that you would consider not so great.
Well, for me, throughout my fitness career, I have a few. There was a few influences that I can remember directly. The first major influence I had in how I trained was Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it was his Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. And the stuff that I gained from that that I have to this day was understanding how to do many, many different types of free weight exercises. That Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding was massive. And it had pretty much every exercise you could think of, classic bodybuilding exercise you can think of, that you could do with dumbbells and barbells. And so what I got out of that was learning how to do all these exercises. I understood how to do them. I understood form. I practiced them. I knew how to, you know, how to feel them. The next big influence I had was Mike Mentzer. I don't know if you guys know who that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mike Mentzer was also a bodybuilder from the 70s. And he wrote a book called Heavy Duty. And in this book, he talked about how going to failure was the signal that told your muscles to grow, and that if you just went to failure hard on one set, you didn't need to do subsequent sets. And I did that, and for a second I got great results, and then my results stopped. But what it taught me was that I could overdo volume, and it taught me how to, at that intensity and volume were inversely related. And so I learned that, and that took me to other phases of my training. And then I read the book Dinosaur Training, and I can't remember
we brought this up in the last episode.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of Kubrick, I think is his last name. I gotta look up his book, because I want to give him credit.
Yeah,
this book gave me Brooks Kubik, mm-hmm, is his name, and this one really got me thinking about how to train for big gross motor movements, how to increase my frequency of training, how to not train to failure.
Mm-hmm.
And that really took me to the next level. Mark Ripto, of course.
You stole mine.
Hugely influential. Yeah, So as far as people who are shit, mm-hmm, in the industry, who tell pro bodybuilders, pretty much most of them are shit in terms of the advice they give. It's true. They don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Ben Pack's pretty solid.
And he's like the exception. Most pro bodybuilders have no idea.
Yeah.
They'll tell you, you know, what they do, and that's about it. And then some of these supplement, fitness gurus, one in particular I've had a little feud with. I'm not going to call him out anymore because I don't want to beat a dead horse. But they just give advice that's going to benefit their pocketbook in terms of selling more supplements. And they're going to, you know, put out videos that they know people will click on, like, you know, how to isolate this part of your muscle, which you can't, or how to, you know, do this new exercise I just invented in my garage gym with the Smith machine. And this is how you, and it's just ridiculous stuff. And they put out more misinformation than good information.
Well, I, that's funny, because I wonder who you're talking about right now, because I think it's important to note first, before I talk about anybody that we follow, or it's hard to find somebody who I just absolutely love, everything that they have to give and the information that they have, because so many people in the industry are tainted some way or another by money. Because that ultimately, most everybody, I mean, of course, everybody puts the pitch that we're here to change people's lives and we want to help all these people, and that's the message that they want to try and promote and say. But then at the end of the day, it is a business and they are trying to make money. And in this industry, it's hard to do that without kind of falling in that kind of gimmick mentality. So even some of the best coaches out there, the best educated, good information givers out there, still have some things that I'm like, I'm not a huge fan of, because they're tied to certain things like that. Far as books, it's funny. I heard Sal name all the books, and all his books are definitely related to bodybuilding and fitness. And I'm kind of I'm all business guy, like business and management, leadership. I've probably read almost, I wouldn't say everyone, but a good amount of John C. Maxwell. I love all of his books. Some of my favorites, 360 Leader is a great book. Developing Leaders Around You is a great book, and Developing the Leader Within are probably three of my favorites of his. I'm also a big fan of Jack Welch, Winning. That was probably one of my favorite books. And then one of the shortest, easiest reads I've ever read that I highly recommend to almost anybody that's in a leadership role is 1 Minute Manager. It's a book that you can read in one day. And I had a lot of takeaways personally myself on leading a staff from that. So that's probably some of my favorite books that I've read. And then from people as far as coaching and fitness, where I get information and I like to pick their brain or look at what they're doing or read some of their articles or stuff. I really like Athlean X. I think he puts a lot of good information out there.
Doesn't mean I stand by everything that he does, but I do think he does give a lot of really good information.
He's actually smart. I mean, he's a very smart dude. You hear what he says, it's like, okay, he
has for how many people follow, like, he's got a big following on YouTube. So, like, I'm always, like, you know, skeptical of those guys because there's a lot of gimmicks involved. But he seems to be pretty, you know, solid with his advice.
Yeah, he does. And even when you dig into his stuff and you go through
What's his name, by the way? Does anybody know?
I don't know his name.
I'll look him up. Yeah,
YouTube, look at his YouTube.
He's Athlene X, man.
Yeah, Athlene X is it. Yeah. A lot of the stuff that he sells, similar as far as like the approach that we have with guides and education, although he does have some gimmicky stuff a little bit in there, I really like a lot of his information. And I know Sal will probably scoff a little bit, but I still like a lot of his information is Lane Norton.
Yeah, no, I'm not scoffing. He was, I'd say, especially in the bodybuilding world, he was one of the first voices of reason.
Yes.
He was.
And that's why I'm drawn to him. That's how I found him, was when I was getting into competing and bodybuilding. And I was searching for an intelligent voice, you know, and I kept running into all these bad coaches and bad information. And then I came across Lane Norton and I was like, finally, somebody who has an intelligent approach at this sport. Like the rest of these idiots, I feel like, are just blind leading the blind. So Lane Norton has a lot of really good tips and information. None of us are fans of IFYM, which that's the part that I feel like, you know, he got kind of sucked into that and now he's tied into that and now he's got to double down on it. But other than that, I think he has a lot of really good information. Aside from that, love T Nation. I think T Nation puts out a lot of really good information.
They do.
I read a lot of their articles. And then for sports, probably somebody who I've grown to really enjoy watching is PJ Performance. You can find him on Instagram. If you're an athlete, especially in basketball, that's his specialty. I was an ex-basketball player, so I enjoy
a lot. Awesome. I've been watching his stuff, too.
He's got a lot. I mean, just his approach.
And he's using technology and all these cool things. Yes. He's getting really, really specific with, like, that skill set, like what to improve.
Yes.
Yeah.
To me, as far as anybody that I've followed on social media and in the sport world, I think he is doing some pretty badass shit. So you can look
him up. Yeah, we got to get him on the show. He'd be awesome.
I actually reached out to him not telling him, but I know his page is flooded, so I don't even know if he saw. So maybe if people get on there and follow and invite him onto our show, maybe he'll start to see Mind Pump fans. So you can check him out. PJ Performance on Instagram, probably one of my favorite guys. And then as far as shit coaches and shit people out there, pretty much the rest, pretty much everybody else. I'm just kidding. I'm sure I'm insulting somebody who's listening.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard, man. It's really tough to find somebody who's putting out really good information out there, other than some of the names that I had listed off and these guys had listed off. And even them, though, you got to just be very careful and skeptical to not fall into a dogma just because, you know, a guy who's a degree and
the dogma thing. So you brought up Lane Norton earlier. Massive respect for the guy. Very, very smart. Tends to be very objective. But he too falls into the whole, I'm going to double down on, you know, what I've been saying and I can't go back on it. Like, there's a lot of new science coming out that says a calorie is not a calorie. That says it's not just about your macros. That says people can gain body fat and lose muscle based upon other things aside from macros, and that you probably shouldn't eat too much fructose and you probably shouldn't eat, you know, processed foods, even if it does fit in your macros. Like, lots of new science coming out, and it would be, I personally would love to see him come out and say, okay, everybody, look, I know I've been saying this, but that was based upon the current
research at the time.
And now we're getting new research, and although the new research is not conclusive, it is showing some interesting information, and I'm going to keep you all posted on what I learn. Like, that to me is that's the mark of a fantastic leader. And unfortunately in fitness, egos are massive and people hate to fucking do that. They don't like to do that. You need to do that.
What did you guys think about the page I tagged you on recently? Because I have just recently came across this guy and I haven't dove into his stuff that much. So I don't want to rep him as good or bad right now, but I'm interested in what you two thought. Did you go through any of his stuff? The hypertrophy coach that's tied to M140, Ben Pack and those guys, part of that group.
I haven't had a chance to check his
stuff. Was the one that was doing the cable flies with the internal rotation.
So what he understands muscle function. He understands muscle function from the few posts that I've seen.
Yeah.
He breaks it down. Whether or not that's an effective use of an exercise, you know, that's a different debate, but that's not what he was saying. He was saying you know, to work the, you know, the pec fibers near the, you know, the collarbone. You want to be able to internally rotate the humerus as you're bringing the hands together with the fly. Absolutely correct. That is, there is some role in internal rotation of the humerus at that when you're doing a horizontal adduction, you know, like in a fly. Absolutely correct. Here's the funny thing. When body, here's, this is how you know a lot of bodybuilders know what the fuck they're doing. When bodybuilders do a fly, you'll see a lot of bodybuilders do this. They'll go down into the fly, they'll come up, and then they'll bring the pinkies together because they think that that squeezes the chest better.
Yeah.
The reality is
in the inner chest.
The opposite.
The reality is
the internal rotation.
That's right. When you're bringing your hands together at the top, the action of the pectoralis is actually to internally rotate the humerus a little bit or turn the thumbs together a little bit, not the pinkies. The reason why they squeeze the pinkies together is because their triceps push their boobs together and they feel like it hits
it. It feels like they got cleavage.
It's actually the other way. And this is how you know.
That's all it is.
This is how you know. Yeah, a lot of them don't know what they're talking about. But the hypertrophy, that guy you were talking about, when I've seen some of his posts, he's he understands muscle function, I mean, very well, and he explains it very well. So, so far, I'm impressed.
Well, I mean, you guys are talking a lot about, you know, different strength and then bodybuilding in that kind of specific world. For me, you know, some of the people that I follow tend to be a little bit more on the movement side and athletics and sports training in particular. And so, I mean, Sal already mentioned one of mine was Mark Ripto's like Starting Strength. It was a book that I, you know, loved, got a lot of great value from. And also like this book, actually, I just not too long ago really got into, and it has so much like deep content in it, and I'm just like finding myself reading it over and over. There's
like
just
gray
so
book that
much
you brought or whatever.
It's Mel Siff's Super Training. It has
it's a big book.
It just has so many like case studies, and a lot of these you know, were conducted over in Russia, and so like the communist Russia and that we were in competition with. And so a lot of the ideas and a lot of the experiments in human performance, they're really big into human performance. And we're just now catching up to a lot of the ideas that they were already working on. And so I've been diving into a lot of that. And that's where you know, you might have heard like myself, Sal, all of us kind of talk about, you know, isometric training and also like these different techniques like we're starting to kind of implement and, you know, some unique stuff. Like they had a lot of like actual credible metrics and validated information, conducted studies that were over in Russia. And so I'm just kind of finding all this stuff. It's like gems, you know, that and so that's a great book. Another one was a Gray Cook's movement book. That's what got me into FMS and the functional movement screening and, like his process with that. And I, you know, I got a lot out of that because I actually directly took that and started implementing it with my clients. And it was just another great way to sort of, it was a tool to be able to, you know, give feedback to somebody like, why can't I move like this? You know, and is there a process to this? And there is a process to that. And so that's one way we were able to sort of show people like, this is actually what your body, you know, is capable of. And like, you can actually move, you know, in this way and twist your body and contort in these positions. So that was cool. And then as far as like the like credible coaches or leaders, I feel in the fitness industry, you know, like as far as anything kettlebell wise, like RKC, all that, you know, Pavel, is it Tatsuri is his last name?
Yeah, I think so.
He's just great in general. He's just got a ton of wealth of information that he provides. You know, even if it's just like Olympic lifting or anything, he's just a great leader with that. And also Mike Mahler is a great kettlebell guy that I follow, and I followed since he got into it. And so that's another good one. I had written down some of the sports trainers, like some people have mentioned Joe DeFranco, and I bought one of his programs back when I was like in college still, and I was just getting into personal training. And he's trained some high level athletes that are in the NFL, and he's got some great programs. He uses like plyometrics the right way. He does a lot of his concepts are very similar to our MAPS program. Like, so he's educated as far as like, you know, rest periods and all these kinds of things. He really has a good solid understanding of like, you know, not overworking his athletes, that kind of stuff. I guess the lot like Mike Boyle would be another one I would mention. And then whatever that Speed of Sport guy is, I forget what his name is, but his,
Speed of Sport. Who's that?
Speed of Sport.
YouTube.
Yeah. He's his, God, I'm trying to remember the name of the guy.
That's the only one I didn't recognize that everybody.
Yeah. He was on actually, Joe Rogan's podcast.
Oh.
And he talked about, just using plyometrics and like he doesn't like, so I mean there's like again dogma, right? So he's completely just in this camp of like only plyometrics and body weight training and speed and explosiveness with his athletes versus like strength training. God, Marinovic, is that right? The Marinoviches, I think. Yeah. So anyway,
I will say this, I feel incredibly blessed to be with you guys because you can see that all of us kind of have different mm-hmm. influences coming up. And my biggest influences now on training and nutrition and that that realm actually comes from you two.
I'm glad somebody said that. I was wondering if one of us was going to, as I was listening, was going around.
I
like,
don't want to be totally narcissistic, but yeah, I am learning a lot from you guys for sure.
Well, no, I mean, you know, every time we sit down and make a program, you know, when we sat down and made, you know, MAPS Performance and MAPS Aesthetic and some of the guides, I learn a lot from the two of you, and I learn a lot from when we're doing the episodes and we're talking about our opinions on different things and discussing and sometimes debating. It either strengthens my position or it changes my position or modifies it. And I think it's important to say that, because if you are someone that is constantly wanting to grow and learn, the best thing you could do is surround yourself with people who have differing opinions or who also seek to learn. And one of the things is what, you know, that you need to consider, that learning and growth does not come from a comfortable space. You don't learn and grow when you're comfortable. You learn and grow when you're uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is you need to be able to allow your ego to be challenged. You need to be able to be okay with being wrong. And, you know, Adam brought up dogma. People who stick to a dogma, who don't change their opinion even based on new research, or who don't even you know, honor somebody else saying something and listen, they're it's too painful for them. They don't embrace it, and they're never going to really grow. And that's very, very important. You know, for me, one last book I want to talk about, which was for me a huge growth experience, was The Warrior Diet by Ori Hofmeckler.
Oh, great.
And this was a major turning point for me. Probably the biggest turning point in my fitness and health life. And why? Because it challenged the very core of what I believed. And that very core was that I had to eat small meals throughout the day. That is literally the foundation of bodybuilding nutrition. That is number one. There's two foundations of bodybuilding nutrition. Eat a shit ton of protein and eat small meals throughout the day. And I remember I was on some forums, on some fitness forums, and lo and behold, these athletes were coming on. They were talking about fasting. And of course, people would come on there and be like, you're stupid. That's ridiculous. You're going to lose performance. You're going to get weaker. You're not going to be as strong. And these guys were coming on and saying, no, my performance is improving, and I'm feeling better, and I'm getting stronger. And at first, I kind of like scoffed at it, like, well, this is stupid. And one of the guys that went on the forum started making the evolutionary case for fasting. Like, well, you guys realize that eating frequently throughout the day is a very new thing. Like, nobody did that long ago. We didn't have refrigerators. We didn't have packaged food. And then a light went off, and I said, Jesus, you know what? That's right. Like, how did we survive before? And we really needed performance at that point. You know, we don't need performance now. Right. So I got the book, The Warrior Diet, and I read it. And I took the leap, and it was very uncomfortable for me. I'll never forget the first day I did it. I was so afraid that I was going to lose my gains and muscle, and okay, let's see how I feel. And of course, you know, I'll never go back to eating the super small meals, you know, all day long again. I'll never do that again. But just because I'm talking about that, I do want to make sure I mention, go to mindpumpmedia.com if you're interested in fasting, because there is a way to do it properly. So I want to say that just to make sure nobody does it wrong. Mm-hmm. So
our final question is from GE Grayling. What are your one rep max on the four big lifts?
Oh yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I'll let you guys.
Better a while ago.
Standing bicep curl.
So here's the deal. We need to swear we're going to be honest. No bullshit numbers. No puffing anything up. No baloney.
Are we talking like current standings right now? Are we talking
fuck that
like
all time? I'm not going
all
current.
Time.
Oh, see, okay, good. I don't think we should do
all time is better.
You want to talk about current? How about both?
No.
Okay. That's fine.
All right. I'll start.
I like all time.
I'll start so that you guys can pad your numbers.
Yeah. We'll load it. I'll do like 5 pounds more.
Yeah. Okay. No, bench press. My all-time best bench press. Now, I've benched more than this number, but not with excellent form. So I'm only going to count when I was bench pressing in a way that would actually qualify for a competition. So I go down all the way to my chest, pause for about a second and a half, and then press it back up. And my all-time best bench press was 335 pounds with that type of form. Now, today, my lift is way less than that. And that's since that point, I've had shoulder surgery on my left shoulder. And my right shoulder isn't the greatest when I bench super heavy. It's okay with everything else, but when I bench super heavy, I'm not okay. So now I'd be lucky if I could break 300 pounds. I don't even know if I can. My deadlift, my all-time best is 600 pounds. My all-time best at under 200-pound body weight was 585. So I did 585, and I weighed 195. And today I could probably pull, I'm close to that, 570, 570. I'm always around that number. Overhead press, I don't know. Are we doing strict press or push press?
Because
I've never really maxed out with a strict press.
Oh, you haven't?
Okay, no.
Fine. Then I'm changing my numbers.
Yeah, because my push press was like, I think the best I've ever done was I did 225 for one was my most ever. And then I think that's it, right? Those are the four. Did I say the four? No, squat.
Squat.
My best squat of all time, full squat, was 475. Today, full squat, I don't know. I could probably get 415, maybe 410, 415. Probably.
Oh, I think you can get a little more than that.
I don't know, because there's a huge, for me,
there's a big difference when you go up like 5 or 10 pounds when you start getting over 400 pounds.
Bro, I could, my posterior chain is strong as shit. Like, I could good morning 405. Like, I could totally do a good morning with 405. To do a full squat with 405 is hard for me. So, I can pretty much guarantee that I don't think I could do more than 415 in the full squat. Yeah. So,
really?
Yeah, I know,
yeah,
right?
I feel like, yeah, you just got strong ass legs. Dude.
I would think
they
so
look
too.
Strong.
Well, just because I know I can get 405. I just got 405 on squat the other day, so I've never lifted more than that. So that would be considered my max. And all my
that's your all time.
Well, yeah, the reason why I wanted to do all time because all my all time strengths are I'm the strongest I've ever been right now. So,
oh man,
I'm definitely. I mean, give or take, right? I'm not.
It depends for me. It's been like up and down. So,
my bench press, the most I've ever bench pressed is 350. I work out with 275 right now, and sometimes I'll go up to 315 on days that I'm running singles or triples. I rarely ever try and press it up just because I'm always concerned about my shoulder, and I actually do a lot more incline. I can add, and what's more impressive to me is I can incline press the same amount of weight as I can on flat bench. So that took me a very long time to get those equal. For the longest time ever, I was only flat benched, and then if I incline pressed, I'd have to reduce my weight by like 75 to 100 pounds, where now I incline press as much as I flat bench press. So bench
yeah,
press.
I rarely go over 185, 200 pounds on the incline. Rarely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on bench press?
Yeah, on an incline. On an incline, yeah, rarely. Yeah.
So, 350 on my bench. A push press. God, it's been a while since I've done that. I can't recall ever doing more than 225. I know I've done that before for a single rep, but I've never done more than that. I've never really tried, actually, to do overhead press. I've always been concerned about my form and my shoulder mobility, so I've never really pushed that limit before. I'd be interested to see now with all my mobility work and going through performance. I've been doing a lot of Z presses, and I've seen my strength with that. I mean, I just Z pressed the other day, 150 something or something like that. Yeah, to Z press that.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and I can behind the head 185 now all the way down, full range of motion. So I imagine I could probably get 225 up pretty easily in comparison now. So maybe I'll do that just to see where I'm at. It'd be interesting to see how much my push press has gone up. Squat, I said 405. My deadlift, just a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I did 545. So I've yet to do over that. I have yet to fail on a deadlift.
I've actually never tried to lift a weight that I and not been able to get it up. So
how did you feel on the 545?
You've seen it on Instagram.
Oh, that one?
Yeah.
You've got 560 at least in you.
Yeah.
I would say 15 pounds over that from what I saw.
Yeah. I feel confident that after doing it and seeing how quick I came up out of it. I'm sure I could do a little bit more. That felt heavy though. As soon as I get over 500, I feel like in deadlifting in the 400s for me, it's like all day long, easy. I don't have to feel great to do it. Once I hit over 500, it definitely the technique and everything starts to come into play big time. And I've said before, anytime I've ever failed at anything, I feel like it's more biomechanical than anything else. So my deadlifts around that.
Yeah, but how much can you guys power clean?
I don't even power clean at all. So
no, too bad, Justin. Not in this conversation.
Forget it. Yeah. I'm going to start with my shitty one first because I want to get it out. I think, seriously, deadlifting is a new skill for me. I didn't even really do it. So I think a lot of it is that. And the other fact that I hurt myself doing it. So I have this hesitancy towards it. I hurt my QL, but anyway, all excuses aside, 455. That's probably all I've really even got to with deadlift, but
which is still a very respectable number. Yeah, this guy,
it's silly, horrible.
But you could squat more than that.
Yeah, I could squat more than that. So
that's so crazy to me. Yeah. How opposite?
Yeah,
from
all,
me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, what? I didn't get up to 500 or nothing crazy. It was in college I did 475 I did in college, squat. And then bench press, I actually achieved 405, so that I was pretty pumped on that. As far as overhead press, this is where it's kind of weird. I did three 315.
Yeah. Holy shit.
315 push press.
You've done a push press with 315?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Where? And it's funny because I actually, at one point when I was in college, I could clean 315 and then jerk it, So.
Where are you at in all those numbers now? Where do you squat? What do you dead?
275 is what I've push pressed. Yeah. So I can still do a reasonable amount with that.
Yeah, no, it's.
But yeah. Squat, I've only really been doing 405, up, and then I get up to 415, 420 if I'm lucky on a good day.
Yeah.
But deadlifts, like I mentioned, is the same, and bench, I'm only 360 range.
Remember when it used to be so important to bench press a lot?
I know. That was the highlight of everything.
That was the big one.
How much you bench, bro?
One thing that I've done that really helps, if you're really interested in that kind of maximal strength, is to get yourself used to using a heavy but sub-maximal weight. So for the longest time, I would always, no matter what, when I deadlift, I would always deadlift with, I'd always do at least a set with one for a single with 500 pounds. And I just got to the point where that felt routine for me. And now I always do a single with 515 or 520.
So
it just gets me good at that.
This is also a place where you say that. I would also, this is where I think negatives play a good role. I remember when I first started lifting with an old school bodybuilder, and obviously he probably didn't understand the science behind it. He just knew it was effective and worked. He would put on weight that I couldn't even do a single rep with, but he would hold, he just wanted me to feel that on the eccentric motion. And we know that we can handle a lot more weight on an eccentric motion than you can in a concentric motion. So, I get on the bench press, and that was back then I couldn't even do two plates and hit 315, which was probably overdoing it. I didn't need to feel that much. But the idea of actually feeling a weight, just being able to hold on to that much weight that you're not used to, getting comfortable with descending that in a controlled manner, and then he would help me with it on the way up. I saw huge, huge gains from that, being able to, and a lot of it's a mental block because you're afraid of that feeling. I mean, I remember the very first time I put 405 on my back to squat. It was like, oh my God.
Oh yeah. crushing sensation.
Oh yeah. It was just the scariest feeling ever having. I mean, for somebody who had never really squatted more than 225, and then I progressed up to 405, and I remember feeling that weight on my back going that's not just a little bit of weight. That's a lot,
Yeah, totally.
So getting used to that feeling, I think, makes a big difference.
Excellent. Well, listeners, please do not forget to leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. And check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. You can find Adam at Mind Pump Adam and Justin at Mind Pump Justin. And also check out mindpumpmedia.com.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. For more information about this show and to get valuable free resources from Sal, Adam, and Justin, visit us at www.mindpumpradio.com. Until next time, this is Mind Pump.